The thoughts, views, and opinions expressed on Group Chat are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Buffalo Toronto Public Media, its leadership, or its affiliates. Enjoy the show.
We're witnessing the end of an era as Stephen Colbert signs off from late night TV, but this poses a bigger question: is who is really controlling what can be said in entertainment now? Hey, welcome back to the chats.
We're here. Nyla in the house. Loving the music.
Me too. It chills us out before because we get a little riled up about these topics. So it gives us a little bit of chill along with I'm Bentley and Charles always keeps us.
Charles!
keeps
hey,
us
Charles! Uncle Charles in the house.
What's going on? I mean, yeah, that's kind of the... I don't want to take my brother's... like that's his thing. Like he goes by everyone's favorite campus uncle.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's his thing because you know he's at Buff State. Yeah. But I have to embrace Uncle Charlie.
Oh, I love that.
I do too. What about Charles the Lion?
Charles the Lion. Uncle Charlie the Lion. Uncle Charlie the Lion.
I will accept it. I have to reach that point, you know. I'm 40 now, so I have to embrace that.
Yeah, you gotta embrace the uncle vibes.
Oh gosh, age is nothing.
We go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Listen, 9:30, I'm gone.
So when Nayel and I are chatting about basketball games that end after 10 o'clock, you're like, please go to sleep.
No, my phone's on do not disturb, so I don't even see
it. No, he does have the do not disturb.
Oh yeah.
Because he'll come up and I'm like, oh, Charles doesn't want to talk to us today.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, that's just because I be asleep. I be tired. I'm like, you know what? It's bedtime for
me. That's because we go in on the group chat, especially when there's basketball games, and we just go like play by play.
Yeah. But it's so funny because I can pinpoint when the conversation starts to get, because like you, Nayel is the one who is not as active throughout the day.
Oh yeah,
we come at alive night, at night.
She's going.
Oh, yeah.
She is sending all types of stuff our way.
And don't let me have to do a, like, in the morning, I can't hold my bladder, baby, 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m. messages, because that also happens.
Yeah, I'm there for that, too.
Yes, I get a message at, like, 4:30 from her. I'm like, yeah, she's
awake.
Can't go back to sleep.
Yes, in case everyone is wondering, we do have our own actual group chat in multiple places. So we have a group text chat, and then we also have a social media chat where we send each other all things that we're seeing in pop culture.
Which both the names for the chats are General Hospital.
General Hospital.
Because of Brick. Brick came back last week. I'm just saying. I did not send a screenshot because I was half asleep, but I will send it
for
to you.
For those missions, that's Stephen A. Smith. People don't know he pretend acts on General Hospital as Brit.
We should just call it the Stephen A. Smith chat, actually.
Oh, I don't think Charles can see his name every day.
I will remove myself from that chat.
We just see
to Stephen A. Smith's chat.
Do his face as the icon. Profile.
Our group chat is inspiration for State of the Scroll.
Yes,
what's going
it is.
On, Charles?
Yes, it is. And once again, before I get started, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe to this channel because it helps us. It helps us. Next week, I'm going to come with a stat that explains why I'm always telling people to like, comment, and subscribe to the channel. But Nayla's favorite person is in headlines again.
Oh, which one?
Brittany.
Love it. That's my girl. That's my girl. What's she doing?
It does have to do with knives again.
Yes, it does.
Like, I called it the first. Did I not call it?
You always call it. It's to the point where I think, like, anytime we bring up Brittany, we just have to just include knives, if that's the case.
I don't think people really realize how serious she is about her knives.
Well, there's a video that just came out where she was with the knives again.
Flipping and dipping.
So these were like butter knives at her table.
No,
right?
She has like hardcore, like real life, like samurai type.
Oh,
knife.
Yeah.
Like she has like a knife like collection.
Yeah, but she was at a restaurant displaying odd behavior. You know, she was seen yelling barking at some points.
And y'all were mad when I said I don't know why they took that conservatorship off. Y'all were mad at me about that. Because I know what Britney be doing.
A lot of people feel that way. A lot of people were saying, and because, you know, now what I tend to do is when I see these posts, now I just go into the comments because I didn't realize how funny these comments are.
Oh, hilarious. The comment section is amazing.
But one of the main things that kept going around is the conservatorship. Like, they were saying, like, maybe they should have kept that because she's definitely not in right mind.
Oh, yeah. She's unhinged for sure. And I think they kept it quiet for a while. I think, you know, when her and Amanda Bynes, I think they were around the same time early on when they were like cutting hair. And people are just like, oh, they're like child stars. And so they're going through it. It's like, no, Britney's a little different.
But it's crazy because, like, you bring that up and you think of, like, that era, and you look at like Christina Aguilera,
right? Yeah,
and she's not really
well that we know of.
That we know of, but
yeah, she like, could keep a job.
But like, who would be Britney's conservator? Because her, I just saw a photo of her dad posted that he does not look healthy.
It was her dad,
but like now, who would it be? I don't know. Like, and okay, so listen, I'm not. I feel like I'm always like defending Britney, but I'm.
Listen, I love her, Britney. I can hit me one more time. I love Britney.
Apparently, I did see the person that, her PR person, whoever responded, was basically saying that she was telling a story at the table about her dog. So I wonder now, because sometimes, you know, I don't get out much. So I'm at a dinner table out, and I'm talking to friends. And listen, this is half a glass of wine in. This is not intoxicated. I'm talking with my hands. I'm happy.
But you're not barking, Bentley. With no knives.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Well,
because then Charles and I'd be like, where's Bentley's conservatorship?
Who would be in charge of me? Charles.
I don't know if Charles can take it.
He'd just be like, sit over there.
I can't.
Stop talking. Focus.
I can't. Because it's anyone that sees in this building sees how me and Bentley are. It's literally like I have to reel you in. I do, because it's like,
listen, I got a lot of stuff. I have to reel
you
in.
I have to bring you stuff because you lose all your stuff. All your belongings is lost.
Well, then you get to work with two Aries.
That's it, every day.
Work with y'all have become my sisters.
That's it.
And it's just so funny when I tell people that, because I'm like, I have two sisters that are Aries and I am a Taurus, and it's the most
loyal vibes you'll ever have.
No, 100%
loyal. We will be like, set it off
loyal
for you.
It don't upset us. That's
correct.
That's all
that
we
is
ask
true.
For.
You don't know us, Charles.
You don't know my life.
It's too true.
Do I have to mention how if things happen, you become like mama bear?
No, she does. Yeah, Bentley. Yeah. Bentley gets into exclamation points. What?
And I do. Besides being the detective too.
Yes.
Yeah, Bentley's the detective.
So,
but you know all about, you already know the backstory of everything before it even happens. Because, like, the Britney thing, she's like, yeah, the knives. Every time it's knives.
Oh, that's
knives.
True. That's true. When I'm like, y'all didn't see the knives?
When she first got the DUI, she's like, it all has to do with the knives.
Yep. So, moving on from Britney to last week, the few weeks we've been talking about it, Drake's album came out.
Boo.
I know. But he did surprise everybody with two additional albums.
That no one asked for.
No one asked for these albums. But Iceman was the most highly anticipated album that he had. People want to say it broke a whole bunch of records. Spotify had to come out and debunk some of it. But the biggest talk that everybody's talking about is what the White House did. The White House decided to post this photo of the album cover of Iceman with the photo. I mean, not with the photo, but they photoshopped his hand with the chain that said MAGA on it. And a lot of people already were upset because of the title of his album being Iceman and the climate of the world that we're in right now and the country. And then there was a video that came out earlier this week with the White House and them playing the Iceman album, and they're showing Ice and Trump and all this other stuff. And it got people upset because, you know, everybody thinks Drake is not of the culture. He's a culture vulture.
They would be correct.
So a lot of people just feel though as if that's been a ongoing thing. And Drake has not been one to come out and debunk it or tell them to take it down like other artists and and directors and things like that, because the White House has done this with numerous
forms of media. Take it down myself.
Yeah, Jack, like, they used Seven Nation Army for something, and Jack White lost his mind.
Yeah.
But I want to know, like, if they're doing all this stuff with these creative situations that they're doing, why are they trying to block everybody else's, censor everybody else?
Drake is safe, Bentley.
But, like, why isn't he saying take it down? Because, first of all, why? Because
he doesn't, because who else is, nobody's listening to it but the people who probably just looked at, go to the actual White House.
Or saw the title of the album. I was already gone. I was already over when I saw the album title.
And like, also his rollout in Canada. I was like, that's corny.
Oh, yeah, that had me too.
Yeah.
What, the ice?
Yeah, why do you think you're so important? You're going
to be. It's also springtime. You know, no one wants to see any more ice. We were already cold way too long. Spring lasted longer than, winter lasted longer than it needed to.
I mean, it was a, I can't even try to defend it. I can't. But as you alluded to in the hook of the show, end of an era, today is Stephen Colbert's last show.
Makes
However,
he's supposed to come here.
The offer is still out there for you, Stephen, to come over here. Matter of fact, hopefully this video gets out there to you. So if it does, we have a message for you.
Stephen, we love and respect you. Not sure if you saw our last video, but the offer still stands. So, Stephen, the request is really simple. We want you to bring you and your team, your show, here to Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We're a scrappy media company, public media company. We're not the Ed Sullivan Theater, but we can make it work. Inside our building, we have a New York State certified soundstage. Major motion pictures have been shot here. Plus, we do all of our series here. Hey, by the way, we need to get more seats for Stephen, okay? And Stephen, we have plenty of electricity here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. As a matter of fact, they haven't rescinded that yet. Hello? And Stephen, we have plenty of office space here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media to give to your staff. But the only difficult part is you're going to have to share an office with Jerry. You know, Stephen, after you're done with your show, there's other places you can help out with. We have a classical station, an NPR affiliate, and we have The Bridge, which is playing a lot of the bands that we see on The Late Show. And Stephen, this would not be a public media video without Pledge. Now, you can do Pledge with us here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Frankly, we kind of need you to do Pledge for us. We really could use your help. And Stephen, we're really proud of our green room here. It is named after Mark Russell, who did all of his PBS TV specials right here. And the only problem is with the government cuts, as you know, we may have to get your makeup from Walgreens if that's cool with you. And Stephen, we have a piano for your band. So, Stephen, that's our story here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We hope that you and your team would love to come here and do your show. The phone number behind me is the number to call. The government has not shut that down yet, so try and call as soon as you can. Thank you so much for everything you've done, from The Daily Show to The Rapport to The Late Show. You're just an inspiration to all of us. So thank you for taking the time. And again, we would love to have you. Thank you, Stephen.
And we now have the new group chat set.
Yes, group chat. I need Tom to do one of those weekly.
I know, he really
Tom is
does.
Hilarious.
Well, Nayla,
and Jerry,
you're about to go on maternity leave, so there's an open spot.
Come on, Tom. Come on, Tom.
Have Colbert. I'll just be in the background.
And then Jerry,
I'll just pop through once in a while
on the side.
All we need is just Bentley to just walk.
Just,
just keep in the middle of the conversation. Just see Billy just walk right by.
No, it's sad on a lot of levels because he is so good, and I think we've seen the evolution. Mm-hmm. I want to say evolution. He's gone through different moments, and you know, he started out as this character on The Daily Show, but there's so much more to him, and he got to show that on his own show. And, you know, we're going to dive in to all of this and get more into it. So we're going to talk about Stephen Colbert, and we're going to dive into the Kevin Hart roast, too. So we're doing that in a few, right, Charles?
Yes, we are.
So is that coming up next on Group Chat? Are we taking a break?
That will be coming up next on Group Chat. We will dive into all of that censorship, Stephen Colbert, Kevin Hart roast. You name it, we're talking about it.
Why do so many people turn to Buffalo Toronto Public Media? It's because we bring you more than just TV and radio. We deliver trusted news, inspiring performances, and programs for the whole family. From Nova and Frontline to BTPM NPR's local news and music sessions from BTPM Classical and BTPM The Bridge. Public Media connects you to the stories, music, and moments that matter. Explore more at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to the chats. We're all here together now. Bentley, Nayila, Charles, and we've added a couple people to the chat. The All-Stars here. I'm like kind of nervous. That's celebrity company over here. Allie Brady, you know her. You love her. You always ask for her back in the chat. Comedian, friend of the show. I mean,
and now I have bangs.
Yes, Allie has bangs.
Big reveal.
And she's matching with Brittany and I. We didn't plan this, by the way.
Sorry, Ed.
It's okay. Get the memo. It's
sorry,
fine.
Ed.
And it's work.
I would like to say, like, first time welcoming, but, like, everybody knows you already,
Ed. Oh, that's sweet. That's fine. For better or for worse, I suppose.
Right? Ed Dranch, who came right over after his morning anchor job. Good Morning Buffalo. You see him on there, but also all over social media, and is a New York State Regional Emmy Award winner.
How do you like that? Four times.
So this is our expert panel today. As Charles noted, we're talking about Stephen Colbert and the show ending. Also, Kevin Hart. What is the impact? You know, you're both in the realm. You're in comedy. You're in journalism and entertainment. What is this? How does this impact you?
I think from a media perspective, it's interesting, right? Because what can be done to you if somebody doesn't like what you're saying? You know, there is obviously more to the story that perhaps we're not getting. And I think right now in our society, we're living in a but world. You know, they could see the facts in front of them, and then all of a sudden it's the but this is also true. We don't realize that two things can be true at the same time. And, you know, I've seen that in my reporting, especially recently, where I was covering a story about a police officer in the town of Hamburg who violated the department's own rules and regulations in an Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrest. He shouldn't have been there the way he came up on the arrest, on the call. And when you do that story, obviously things are very sensitive right now. People are on heightened awareness, and there's a concern among others, right? There's a pro-police side and there's an anti-police side, pro-ICE, anti-ICE. And that's just the society we're living in right now. So on one hand, you've got the people who say, you know, this guy did his job. Great job, officer. He's saved lives. And he has. On the other hand, there are the people who say he broke the rules and should be reprimanded, which is what my story was all about. But what you see on Facebook is this guy's a great guy. This guy's great. But we're not able to accept the other side. We're not seeing the other side of things. And I think that that kind of limits us from getting a global perspective of what's going on.
Yeah. Well, and who's making the calls, especially with all of these entertainment mergers? That's less voices in the room. That's less opinions. Sure. That's less decision makers. And, you know, I think in the beginning, I think people weren't thinking, oh, this isn't as big as, you know, they're entertainers. It's not as big of a deal. But really, they represent a whole part of our society.
Yeah. And corporate submission to political pressure. I think that's what a lot of people feel is the issue, and what is not good, whether whatever side you're on, that is very serious. And they're taking a very independent voice away that we need to hear.
And I think we conflate like free speech and hate speech, right? They're not the same. And hate speech leads to violence. And so when you take away people's rights to, you know, have an opinion, that's a catch 22, right? And I think when we get to the roast, we'll chat a little bit about, you know, the difference between free speech and hate speech.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think to Ed's point, it's people like to see people in a certain light. And so it's hard for it's hard to change people's belief systems, right or wrong. Cause you can think like someone's evil for forever and they do something right. And you're like, I don't believe that at all.
Exactly.
Or they're great. And they're like, oh, they're not capable of doing that. Yeah. You're just like, okay, well, people are capable of doing a lot of things on both sides.
Well, and even in comedy, I mean, right, satire is protected speech.
Right.
But there's always an element of truth in satire.
Yes. Right? And that's why certain people don't like it.
Right.
And the other thing is, like, hate speech, which is the big misconception, hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment.
Right.
So, you know, that's not when people are using hate speech and saying, oh, that's my freedom to say what I want, but then saying, oh, but these comedians can't criticize certain people. There's always, like, seems to be a double standard.
It was kind of interesting what you were saying about, you know, the Drake necklace from the White House. I mean, it really is an interesting perspective. And the questions that you guys brought up are valid. I mean, you know, how can he be critical, but, you know, others not? It's a dichotomy that is just there, and we have to wade through it. It's so bizarre.
And symbols mean things, right? Like, you wouldn't put up certain symbols because you know whether technically it means something or not. You already know what it alludes to.
Yeah, right? What it implies.
No response is like polarizing.
It's you can't, like, if I'm Drake, I'm not cool with anybody putting a MAGA anything, regardless of like how I sway right or left, because my fans could be on both sides and it looks like, you know, then we end up just being Nicki Minaj in the White House.
I mean, I was here for it. Like, I really enjoyed the content.
Well, I was like, maybe he has a feature with Nicki. Maybe this is all a Drake and Nicki album.
Listen, Nayla usually is our crystal ball. So, like, she always is predicting.
Who is going to be his friend at this point?
You know, it was interesting because we were kind of diving into this. I actually called, and he will be on a guest on future shows, Paul Cambria, who was the, he's a big First Amendment lawyer, and, you know, he was an attorney in the People versus Larry Flint, which is a groundbreaking
iconic
censorship.
Great movie.
Great movie. Shout out to Courtney.
But he would know, right? Like, he's the expert here.
Yes.
He didn't say anything, and he goes, well, that's why the First Amendment was created, to keep government out of speech and free speech, entertainment. That involves anything that we want to say about the government, whether it is satire, whether it is Saturday Night Live or Stephen Colbert.
But also, don't you have other things to do? Like, that's what you are president of the United States with the administration, your cabinet. We have a lot going on. Yeah. You're worried about Stephen Colbert on a late night show?
Well, I mean, every president has, and, you know, every president is picked on in comedy. I mean, he just has more reasons maybe to be.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, our job is to be the fourth estate, right? Mm-hmm. To be the watchdog over government, all three other estates. But when we're limiting voices in that arena, and even locally, you know, potential what's going on with Channel 2, Channel 4 here. We're limiting those voices, and that's never good for societal concerns, number one. Number two, CBS has basically said that this is because of financial issues. So, you know, just throwing in a little fact here.
You know, you're the
investigative
reporter.
You know, just keeping it straight here.
Follow the money
for the first
trail.
Time.
Yeah.
Money is power.
We'll tell them what we thought, Drake.
Right. Okay.
Elliot, have you started, like, obviously this is a drastic big moment where he doesn't have a show anymore on that network, but have you been seeing this all along? Have you been seeing glimpses of this in the comedy world where comedians are comedians nervous about telling certain jokes?
Well, I'll say, first of all, I think it's really important as a comedian to satirize current events, right?
Yeah.
And that's the importance also of Stephen Colbert. Many reasons why he's important. But I think when anyone talks politics nowadays, especially in the last 4 years or even since COVID, it's very, people get very standoffish. Mm-hmm. So you have to do it really well, you know, and you have, so I don't think local comedians feel it, but I think, like, if Jerry Seinfeld brought it up at Shays, people felt it, or, you know, like you see it that way. So even I went to, do you guys see John Mulaney when he came to town?
Mm-mm. I didn't, but I wanted to.
Great. But he didn't, he was not great. Like he didn't go, but he was fantastic, but he didn't go too into politics. And I think that was very intentional because, you know, comedy is supposed to make you exhale and make you enjoy and make you laugh because times are complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't notice that comedians feel it in the audience or they like, I think we're kind of like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, let me try it again.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of what comedy's all about, but not really in the local scene, I would say.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right about like people wanting a break. And I think, but I also think, yes, I agree, like totally that people want a break. I think that in this context of the late night shows, they've always, like you said, satire always is around current events. This is what they do every day. They're almost, they're the newscast after the newscast.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, if you think about the time slot and how it was originally created, it's like, okay, you got all the bad news. Now we're going to, you know, make you laugh about it.
It's satire is almost an educational form of comedy.
Yeah.
It's, if you don't get it, like you're the joke. You know?
And it's also very specific. Yeah. Like not every comedian can do that because you also have to be really well read to go into politics in that way. Like you can, you know, there's
he's brilliant as
it is. 100%,
I mean, it's not easy to be a comedian, period, but it's definitely not easy to play politics in it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, Bentley, because what you're saying is true, right? Like the idea that this was created after the late night newscast, the 11 o'clock show. But guess what? No one's watching that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. Like all of this appointment television doesn't exist anymore.
Yep.
And so, you know, from my estimation, you know, he may not have a job anymore. But that's not the last that we're going to see of him either, right?
And people are doing amazing. I mean, you have Don Lemon that's killing it. Mm-hmm. Was it Jim Acosta? Joy Reid. These folks are like killing it on YouTube on their own channels without all of the bureaucracy and everything else and doing just fine.
Yeah.
And probably podcast better too. Because their money is their money and they can run their own media companies. And
but that's what's like happening to media right now also is that, you know, we are in troubled waters, period.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Yeah. There is no question about this. Every media organization is dealing with the same thing. And so it's a matter of figuring out how you proceed and how you change. My favorite slogan is adapt or die. And so we are having to wade through those waters just like he is.
Yeah.
And I'm certain he will be just fine.
Well, and it's always like, you know, if you look at media across the years and what people consume, you know, it's almost like they still want the same content, but they've just change the ways that they consume it. So you just have to be the next thing. And like, Ed, whenever I see, I watch most of your stuff, not when you do it.
And that's my point.
To be honest.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you made
that.
Do you not watch either?
I was like, it's too early.
There's also a lot of chaos.
I get it. We only add to it too.
Yeah. I know. And I'm like, wait. Yeah. But you adapted, you did that for a reason, and you're broadening your a bigger audience.
And I will tell you that people have stopped me on the street and say, love what you're doing on social media, which is so cool to me because so often it was, we watch you every morning. And, I love hearing that because it's exciting, right? Like, this is part of a job. And, you know, we're here to entertain, but we're also here to inform. But the fact that people are watching and consuming on social media, there is still a desire, a hunger for content that informs.
Right.
So it's just a matter of presentation in that capacity.
And I learned I learned a lot on watching The Daily Show. Watching on The Daily Show.
Down into layman's terms for folks that like may not necessarily understand all the political jargon or just anything that's happening that is just like a quick, like, this is what's going to flash for like 60 seconds and we talk about it for 2 minutes on a regular news station.
Yeah. I'm almost thinking he's going to get bigger, but I don't.
We'll go to HBO, Netflix, he'll adapt. He will do a podcast. You know, now there's 20 people losing their jobs at the late night. So they'll
and
maybe
those are the folks that you really worry about because Stephen Colbert's check is fine.
Oh, that's a good point because with all the consolidation and the mergers,
everyone else is not getting paid.
The people behind
unemployment for 6 months.
You need less people.
Yeah.
The thing about that is that these people often take their teams with them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you're loyal to the guy, then why not bring him over to whatever it is he's doing? There's always a need for a producer. There's always a need for a writer, right? And so all of that team behind him will likely travel. And so, you know, he lands on YouTube, he lands on Netflix. That's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, people are paying for a subscription. Guess what? They're all going to get paid too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, on the, you know, social media content note, Allie, I'm going to ask you this because, and I know we've talked about it before, but, you know, once you're on social media and you have a clip of your comedy, it is there.
Yes.
It's not something somebody heard in a live show. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, and so if you say something and it's, and people take it out of context or whatever, it is there. It mm-hmm. can be shared. It's going viral. So does that make people hold back, or is that, does that make comedians maybe want to do it even more?
Right. Well, first of all, I'd like to apologize for anyone that's heard anything 6 years or earlier. so sorry, everyone. You know, well, we talked about it. Yes, if you have something on a video form or clickable form, you can't really do that joke again,
right?
You know, or you can, but it doesn't hit as much, or maybe it is your favorite joke and you want to hear it again. But I think, yes, there is a little bit of you're guarded maybe, or you don't, you know, a lot of comedians, a lot of musicians, you have to lock your cell phones up now. No phones in a show. And that's for a reason, because again, yes, you're protected. Maybe you're trying a new joke out and you don't want people to take it out of context or, you know, make it what it wasn't supposed to be.
I think that's why people do a lot. From what I've seen, a lot of comedians, they show a lot of their like audience work.
Oh, 100%.
Because
it's the easiest thing.
It's the easiest, and they always change. It's not going to be the same thing.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah. And that's, it is, yes.
And comedians, we're noticing a lot, and I think it's fun to kind of do crowd work, but there are people that now go to the show not to hear the jokes, but to actually talk at the show, and you're like, that's not what it was intended to do.
No.
Only respond if you're being spoken to. Like, there's those things that, like, now the voiceover does. You know, like, only respond if.
I saw Mateo Lane a couple of years ago.
Oh, I love Mateo.
He's so funny. But the first thing he said is like, oh my God, put your cell phones away because I can't use this on Netflix.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's like my Mateo Lane voice. But, you know, but that's, I was so surprised. I was like, wow, okay, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, to your point, it really is limiting in that capacity.
Right. In a script, like, I think people forget that with comedy, it's like, yes, there's that improvisational part to it. But it's like anybody that has a script, you work a really long time to write these things.
Sure.
And it is not like you have to make sure it's funny, and then you're trial and error all the time. So when you get those big specials, you don't want people, because you're just you're literally just trying it out. I went to go see Dave Chappelle a couple years ago in DC, and he just had like a separate thing afterwards, and he invited folks to, so he was like, hey, I just want to try some stuff out.
Wow.
Like, and
your
we
focus
just
group.
Listened. Yeah, it was literally a focus group. So the expectation wasn't necessarily like high, but it was more for him to be like, I just want to test some jokes out.
That's awesome.
And see what happens. It's amazing.
There's a big difference between a beat, a breath, and a pause. And so when we're doing our, you know, our jokes, like, there, it's intentional. So then when we're even talking to the audience, like, there are certain jokes that I do that I know is going to get a reaction. I'll ask, like, who's a dog person, who's a cat person, and then there's usually some sort of weird thing, and then I go into, all right, what's your weird cat name, because everyone has a weird name for their cat. It's cute, very cute. Any cat listeners, this is not like, they're cute names, like Snowball, right? And then dogs have like human names, so like I know that's going to happen, so I kind of am aware of it. But that little 2 minutes might go longer if you're talking to an audience. So it's like, so then that clip is like, no, I didn't want that to go out. I just wanted to make fun of your cat name. You know, I don't know. It's
Well, I mean, Allie, I know that I first came into your orbit by seeing your stand up, but then as I got to know you more, I realized like how
that I'm a
smart
woman.
You do. It was like, wow, you're making it work in comedy, and you're a female.
It is the hardest art form. I'm like convinced.
I think dancing's a lot harder. I don't know. It's just,
maybe
never seen me.
But I do think comedy, out of all the performing arts, by far is the hardest, because the expectation is different. Like, when I think when you go and see a theater show or like a live concert or something, like, everyone knows they understand the expectations, because people tend to do it in schools. Like, they're learning music lessons or, you know, they've taken some sort of a dance something, or they, you know, socialize dance, and, you know, same with acting. But people don't really just get comedy training, you know, ever.
Well, comedy is so,
minus a class clown, but that's not the
thing. It's subjective.
I mean, it's so subjective.
That's
exactly. Yeah, but that's why it's so interesting too. But also, music's subjective, and it's so solo, right? It's not a team It's not really a team.
No, I say everybody was good that did it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm telling you. Just, me, you know, solo dancing looks like, but mom, look what I can do. It's not.
But you're so informed, like, on a lot of issues. And so I think that brings something also. Mm-hmm. Then as I started to know that, I realized that brought something to your comedy. And I feel like those are the comedians that I gravitate to. And I feel like that's why I did gravitate to a lot of the late night comedians. Yeah. Because they had to know. I mean, yes, they have writers. But like Stephen Colbert was somebody that, you know, wasn't faking it. Yeah. And I feel like him, Kimmel, once they started to get censored, they dove in more. They're like, yes, nope, you're not doing this.
And in order to be a good comic, in my belief, or even a good journalist, or anyone, you have to be well-rounded and well-read. So you have to know both sides, and you have to know what's left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And you don't have to pick a side, but you need to know what people around you, what your audience is thinking, or what they're leaning towards. So I think that's also why, you know, these late night voices are so important. Whether it's Guthrie or Colbert, but that you need to know what is going to make people outraged and what are making people are going to be on your side. Like, is that?
Yeah,
it's
my morning
criticism.
News.
Right.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah. And being vulnerable is, because a lot of times what makes people laugh is like they're things that people do personally that they don't say out loud. And like for comedians.
Or we do.
I'm working on your
daughter's laugh. You're like, or they're doing too much and trying to be an influencer on social media. But with comedians, when they bring up stuff, you laugh because you're like, you do that too.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Especially like, I feel like with a lot of like female comedians, I feel like they come out and they say some stuff that they tend to be a little bit more like grungy, down to the ground, sometimes more than men are, especially about, you know, different like, you know, things that people do in their bedrooms and stuff like that. And, you know, people laugh because nobody talks about, because they're usually ashamed to.
Yeah.
Give us an example.
Okay, so so something that's very, I think is funny, that I'm this is a joke I'm working on, so I probably can't, don't clip this, everyone. Someone actually both know took their young child to the dentist, and this kid was under the, was like two. Mm-hmm. And then I came home to my significant other, I said, can you believe 2-year-olds are going to the dentist? And he's like, yeah. I was just like raised with maybe an ill-informed mother or someone that didn't have a lot of money. And I didn't go to the dentist until I had full adult teeth. And so now I'm working on a joke about just how you guys are mortified. How just I didn't have money.
Fair.
We didn't
they're
know the dentist was a
not,
thing.
Their teeth that come out. I mean, it's a fair thought.
I mean, I'm knock on couch. Like, I don't know how my face turned out this way.
Gorgeous.
Thank
and
you.
Like,
by not going, smoke and mirrors and think. Yeah,
listen,
but wow.
I have a child and I'm like, wait, when do we have to take him to the dentist? Because I'm like.
So that's why now you'll be informed that you should.
It's like, why are we pulling teeth that are about to come out?
Yeah.
I can't remember when I first went to the dentist.
No, I knew it. I'm with home girl. I was like, the dentist is also wildly expensive these days, so I was like, is it necessary or is it not?
I shouldn't have to wait till I was 11. Like, that was kind of bad.
Your teeth look great though.
Yeah. Right. 11 is late, but it's not, it's so, like, but it's, you know,
it's late by 9 years. That's not good.
Well, we also had the Kevin Hart roast recently, as you guys were talking about, you know, Netflix specials and censorship. So Charles, do you want to give us a little bit of a background? So, you know, Kevin Hart roast, you know, these roasts are always controversial, but there were some things that edited and some things that weren't.
Ooh. Yeah.
So the Kevin Hart roast was a little controversial because one of the comedians made a joke about George Floyd. Which didn't sit well with a lot of people. There was a running joke, I guess each comic had something to say about Cheryl Underwood and her husband who passed away by suicide. So they're making all these jokes about her and her husband. And a lot of people have voiced their opinion and concerns and issues that they had with it. Didn't make it any better that Kevin Hart the next day went on social media still intoxicated, basically being like, all the comedians killed it. They did a great job. They understood the assignment. I had no issues with anything that any other comedian said. And it's like, there's certain, and I get that they say, you know, you kind of get, you laugh at people's pain, but there's certain pain that you just don't laugh at.
Yeah. Like, it also makes it be funny. They were trash. Like, that was like, that my biggest thing was like, they weren't good.
And the
like,
biggest thing that a lot of people also were saying was the writers that was writing these were all white writers. And you're making these jokes about these black people. And someone had to sign off on it. Obviously, they're saying Kevin Hart said, okay, this is good. The host did state that he did ask Cheryl behind the scenes if this was okay. And she kind of was like, okay. But still, it's still the principle of the matter that you're making jokes about her deceased husband who committed suicide.
Right.
So the naive comedy person in me, with these roasts, I guess I fall for the smoke and mirrors. I was under the impression that they didn't, that whoever the roast, so Kevin Hart doesn't know what jokes they're going to tell. Because it's centered on him.
There's a teleprompter, though.
There is a teleprompter.
And they're kind of, you can see some people like reading along to it.
Yeah. Because the roast is different than just like comedy snaps. And I think that's also different, like culturally. I know for black folks, like you snap back and forth all the time. So it's like I say something to you, you say something back to me, which is very different from a roast. So I know a lot of black folks, they were upset with the suicide, but like also everything was like about Cheryl Underwood being like a dark black monkey and like just everything her. And Chelsea Handler came out, it was a couple days ago, yesterday, and she was like, they're super misogynistic and sexist and racist and all these other things, like by nature, like, you know, essentially kind of like just being in that circle, like the some of the comedians they picked, she would have never allowed to have on the stage, especially with that many people of color and women.
Outside of the comedy perspective, if we allow this to continue on in terms of allowing racism that may be couched in other things, couched in a roast, couched in comedy, I think it only perpetuates the problem further and further. And it allows us to bring the walls down, which is a bad thing, I think, especially considering what happened in our own community, right? I mean, how did something like this happen? Because we allowed the idea of white supremacy to come to the surface. And so there's got to be a line everywhere. And like, not to be serious here, but I often walk up to the line, I tiptoe it because I think it's kind of intriguing for somebody to watch on TV, and I think it makes the show more interesting. You never know what Drench is going to say, but like, I'm never going to cross that line and say something that would offend somebody in such a deep way, because why would you do that? Why would you want that to be who you are?
And what are you looking to do? Like, what are you looking to do for your audience? Right. I guess, like, you know, it's censorship can be really, really tricky, because there's a line of like, okay, what should we be doing and what's the law? So what can we, you know, it's a fine line, because once you start with censorship, then everything, you open up everything to be censored. Mm-hmm. However, like, what is the point of some of these jokes? Like you said, they're not good.
No, I just think people also just need to
be cruel.
They feel, right. Yeah. So it's not, you're not adding anything to like the zeitgeist, or you're not making people think, or you're not,
and it's
really,
not informed. Yeah, exactly. You're not making people think. And they're not reading.
I guess my point is, though,
they're not laughing.
Right, but if somebody's saying it and it's mainstream, it perpetuates the problem, right? Somebody sees it and it's like, okay, if they're saying it, I can say it. Or if they're doing it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
And if you have somebody like Kevin Hart that co-signs it, that's another problem. Because if you have a black man who's saying, oh, this was fine, well, then they're like, you know, you get the white supremacists that say, well, Kevin Hart said it was fine. Right. He's black.
Right.
Like Herschel Walker.
Yeah. So Pete Davidson is very open about his mental health issues, how he lost his dad in 9/11. And they kept, you know, making fun of that. And you just saw the look on his face. And he just, you know, he's like taking it.
Yeah.
Like a lot of, you know, comedy can be cruel. And you just have to suck it up and take it. And it shows like you have thick skin. But, and it goes into that sticks and stones narrative we all heard. That's not true. Like words hurt so deeply.
But it's also repetitive.
It's like, so, we
it was
get
so
it,
repetitive during the roast.
I know.
That every single person, and also for me with the writers, I'm like, you have white writers like Neil Brennan, who's culturally competent.
Yes.
That could have written.
Brilliant.
I don't
Neil
know
Brennan's
the four
brilliant.
That did it specifically, but given what they wrote,
I
wouldn't put you on the cultural competency list
no.
of comedians.
And don't, I mean, it's, I think certain things are, should be off limits because of the point of, you know, it's adding fuel to the fire that we already feel right now, you know, like there should not be, I don't think it's appropriate for anyone to do lynching jokes, period.
Yeah.
Yes. That is not funny. There's no means to it being funny. And when there's legislation that like people are trying to make things legal again, like there is, there's real conversations. And it's just not, it's not okay. I don't know.
No, well, especially when people know it, by the, at this point, you know what's going on in the world, you know, and it, and especially if you're out there performing, you know what is happening. You know the climate we're in, so you probably could have chosen better things to be in your jokes. And you know, you were talking about people's faces, and I don't know, maybe because I'm ever super sensitive in this time right now, but I remember, I've never seen faces in a roast like that. Like, multiple people. Like, it wasn't just one person getting uneasy. Mm-hmm. There were multiple people in that roast watching these jokes that got uncomfortable.
And also, if you need people to write your jokes, and you're a comedian, I mean, are you a comedian? You
know, well, like, for $10 million, I might need a lot of team. I'd be like,
I mean, I get for, like, skits or, like, an actual show. You know what I mean? But in terms of, like, a roast, if you can't come up with your own roast, I don't know that you need to be participating on the stage.
And plus, the roast has changed. It started in 1949 in a Friars Club. It was after a French musician. And then it started, you know, the Dean Martin 1972 roast. And then, you know, I started noticing it got real cruel in 2002 against Chevy Chase. And the jokes were just like, no one likes you, you're mean, you know. And you just saw, like, the look of, oh, this isn't fun anymore. So now I think after that, it just started going, how cruel can we get? And then the people that watch, I mean, I think roast can be funny and brilliant at times, but I loved Chelsea Handler's.
She was so
funny.
Great.
Yes. And you know, she knew what was going to happen. You're going to make fun of the fact that, you know, I have slept around or that I dated 50 Cent, you know, and she knew it. And she came to the table and she tried to shut it down before anyone did anything. But, you know, it's almost like people are watching. It's almost like a car crash, but in comedy, you know, you're just waiting for that next Nikki Glaser, Tom Brady roast moment. You're just waiting for that. Mm. Like, the fact that Cheryl Underwood's now storyline, people's first impression of Cheryl Underwood for this generation might be this roast. And, like, she's brilliant.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
She's, like, she's an icon in the comedy world. Mm-hmm. And this is now the new moment in her life. And it's, like, it must be very hard for her. I don't know. I just...
Yeah. Well, let me ask this question, too. I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier. There's an air of truth in satire, right? There's
70% of just kiddings are truth.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, is this who they are as people?
I would think so. I mean, according to Chelsea Handler, what she was reading yesterday...
Yeah. Tony Hinchcliffe is not... Yeah.
She was very clear that, like, this is who they are.
Shane Gillis.
Like, she was like, these people that were up there talking the way they were talking was not because it was written that way. Right. That was something that, you know, was probably mutually... you know, agreed upon before they went up there.
And, isn't, you know, props for Chelsea Handler for, she's another comedian that has a lot of intelligence behind her. I mean, she can get raunchy, but you know, that's not an easy thing for, I think somebody in entertainment to do is to come out and say like, no, this is not okay. I mean, she's at a level where she can probably do what she wants, but for her to make these statements is also important after the fact.
And doesn't it come out, and she's now on the line, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's putting her career essentially out on the line to say, take a stand against what it is that she's saying. And I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
But also very frightening.
Yeah. And also, I was like, with Kevin Hart, I'm like, well, where are your morals for standing up? You know, like, I get you're making a ton of money and you've gotten to this new, you know, upper echelon of success in entertainment, but at what point were you going to step in? Yes. It's your show. Were you going to say, you know what? You need to tone it down. Or you can come back and do a snap that's going to like, okay, we're not going to have this. And just, you know, shut it down immediately. I think the comedy show he recently did with like all the comedians, Marshawn Lynch was on there.
Yeah.
And one of the comedians got a little, he mentioned something about Lynch and he said, be careful, boy. Like Marshawn Lynch, like he cut it off right there. He was like, watch your mouth. Like, and then you could tell the comedian got a little like, well, it's also Marshawn Lynch, so.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for those moments to happen. You know, like I was waiting for someone to just like be like, stop.
I covered it.
I was like.
Charles heard it.
Give me back. Wait, what? No. I was just going to say, give me back The Rock and Kevin Hart content. That's what I want.
But
what were you guys just talking about?
Not in a little.
Charles is over. Charles is about to pop in and say.
But there was even a, like, no, he said. said, like,
I wasn't
Kevin
sure
Hart,
we were talking about the same Marshawn Lynch, by the way.
He said, like, don't talk about the kids. And the fact that someone kind of, like, he even has a standard. Do not go about this. Do not talk about my kids. Do not talk about my wife. So, like, that, like, if your kids are off limits, why isn't talking about Cheryl Underwood's husband? You know, I, where's the line? No, right, sorry,
I was going to say, because I know you just said you want Kevin Hart and Rock.
Yeah. I want that content back.
They had it.
Charles said,
Did you not saw, see that part?
But even with that,
I mean the prior video, the social media videos, that's the kind of content I want from them.
Okay, because during the roast, it was very...
Yeah.
Rock was very much pushing that button with his wife. Like, it was... For me, I was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
For her, as he keeps on alluding to wanting to sleep with her. And it was like, I could tell, like, they were joking, and it was the banter between the two of them. But you could just tell at points when they went to her, his wife, she was not comfortable with
that. But you know there's somebody, being a significant other of a comedian, you know somebody's going to get called out, especially the way The Rock and Kevin Hart go, like, back and forth with each other. Yeah. So I'm like... I don't know that. I'm saying more like, I like when he picks on him about all the food he eats. You know, like, let's go back to that. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Well, and The Rock is married, so that I think that's just to make Kevin squirm. So I like that. That's him being like a friend, being like,
Kevin's wife, I love it. But she also, but there was a Netflix special that he did about his life where he was, you know, he cheated on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so it's, I think it's a little touchy. That's a touchy.
Is that like Will Smith territory?
No.
No red table.
Oh, yeah, no, it's not no Jada. No. That's okay. That's not red table, girl.
You just opened the can of worms.
So we're not allowed to slap. That slapping's not.
Slap
not
is
good.
Not it. But okay. But
sticks and stones, Ben.
I just don't understand why you have the line for your kids and your wife,
right?
But you don't have the line for people that have died. I think that is crazy.
Yeah, or your friends. Like, you know that hurts your friend. And she's probably heard everything. You know, and the fact that Shane Gillis said, I spoke to Cheryl beforehand. But how are you, like, signing off? Like, talk about like, that.
But it's, if I'm doing a roast and you're saying, hey, I just want to let you know this comes up. If you're a comedian, you're hoping that people have the brilliance and the comedic with, you know, Richard Pryor, like, lighting himself up on fire because he's high.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, those certain things that are tragic can be funny. But I don't know that she was anticipating it was that. You know,
I was involved with the roast before, and I knew they were going to say, I wear too much makeup. So I went on stage and I like had no makeup on, natural eyebrows and everything. And
well, come on,
Allie. Cute.
Alicia but, Keys.
Nope. Let's do a proactive one. So I was like barefaced and I was like, okay, I got this. And he still made fun of, he's like, look all this makeup she's wearing. And the audience was laughing. And I was like, it's not even, doesn't even have to be true. And people are still just like, hi, you were mean to her.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's what's so.
Well, it's interesting because it's also, May is also Mental Health Awareness Month. And there's so many things that we could dive into, even with comedy and the arts around mental health. And you know what? We're actually going to be doing that next week.
How do you like that? A little tease.
Continue this conversation. I got to thank everybody, and then I'm going to throw it to Charles because he always has a thing he has to do. So thank you to Ed Dranch, Allie Brady, obviously Nyla. We're on the countdown with how long we have Nyla for.
I know. I think Charles actually may win this bet. We're hoping that we last 37 weeks.
I got Juneteenth, June 19th.
That's the week we're looking at.
All right.
It was supposed to be 4th of July, but we're... chug along.
All right, what do you got to tell everybody, Charles?
I think that was the cue right now. make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Yeah.
We still like, got comment, like 2 minutes. No, is that clock wrong?
The lights look like they went out, so yes.
We're done.
It's our cue to go.
Wrap it up.
It's too much fun. We're sorry. Cut the chat. Got a little chatty today. Thanks for joining us on Group Chat.